Welcome to another edition of Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. I'm joined today by Aaron McLaughlin, our resident expert in all things private industry, economic, and really just market trends. She is our guru when it comes to looking at seeing what the economy is doing. She has a new special issue of the Private Industry Brief, which is now live up on acec.org. And she's also going to be presenting on this very subject at our upcoming fall conference, which kicks off just later this month. And kind of as a subtle, well, not too subtle plug, but registration is open for this 3-day virtual event. And I will tell you what, we have been hard at work putting together a program which is going to rival the in-person event. I think that, Aaron, you'd agree with me, we'd much rather be in sunny San Diego than the comfort of our own home. But you do get 3 days of full programming, keynotes, a congressional panel, a CEO panel. Our institute is doing a presentation on the playbook for infrastructure that they've been working on with the Accelerator for America. We've got some good names coming, including Charlie Cook, on day three, who's going to be talking about the election just mere days away from the election itself. And you'll get to see and hear, because everything's going to be very virtual and very connected, and you'll be able to have a video connections as much as humanly possible, Aaron talking about the brief in detail. So go over to our website, acec.org, and you'll click on the conference link. It's right there at the top of the page. Register now. I think it's about a third worth of savings. I mean, the price this year compared to our in-person events, I mean, you're saving money by being able to get all this access, access to all this content for 3 days. And if you register, you get to access it for 90 days after the fact. So you get 90 days, 18 PDHs, concurrent sessions, keynotes, general sessions, you name it, we got it. So go over and register today. And away from the shameless plug and back to the program. So Aaron, the Private Industry Brief special issue for fall.
Yes.
What are we looking at right now? What's the main thrust of the update?
Well, once our pandemic-caused recession settled in this past spring, we relied on a lot of our forecasters and the market intelligence that we followed to tell us which markets would come out of this stronger or be strong through this. And everybody was in agreement that data centers and telecommunications was going to be the strongest market for the foreseeable future. And of course, that is a private market. So each year for this is our second full year, we try to do a special topics brief for the private industry briefs. And so it was a natural fit that we concentrate on data centers and telecommunications. Although data centers are obviously vertical and of particular interest to our firms that do MEP work, whereas telecommunications, all the stuff underground that links data centers with our homes and businesses, is largely horizontal and is a market of particular interest to our civil engineering firms. So that is the market that we are concentrating in because of its strength.
Yeah, and that's kind of the marriage between the vertical and the horizontal, right?
Yeah.
The centers being built, and then the pipes to kind of plug into the centers, and that's more of an infrastructure question.
Yes.
So what's been the real movement? I can imagine that the pandemic and demand for more reliable data connections, because so many people were working from home. I mean, I guess that kind of drove demand, but you know, beyond that, what's really kind of pushing this?
Well, first of all, the forecasters were definitely correct. So I cover in my brief the fact that just in the first half of 2020, data centers as a REIT, as a real estate investment trust, as a capital marker for us to look at, grew over 19%. The next best category in commercial real estate was 2.3% for industrial, and that's due to e-commerce. Everything else shrank quite a bit.
Yeah.
But really the demand both for data centers and for the telecommunications infrastructure that connects homes and businesses to data centers is the fact that we're all streaming a lot more. So, you know, obviously many, many people, especially in sort of the white collar professional services workforce such as us, are working from home. people are also entertaining themselves at home. So the amount of bandwidth, for lack of a better word, that it takes to stream Zooms and to stream Netflix and other things is a lot more than it was before. So, you know, the demand for this kind of the kind of internet that we all need in order to be successful, you know, in both school and work and entertain ourselves is a lot more than it was before. So according to FMI, it is going to be the strongest growing market, and it will grow, expected to grow for design and construction costs between 23 up to 27 billion between now and 2024. So, you know, this is a good market for us to highlight and for firms to consider focusing on just by the fact that there will be growth within it.
Yeah, it's not going away. I mean, I think that this is one of those market trends just beyond our sector, but just at large, which has been kind of like a cloud on the horizon. And especially when it goes into the entertainment sector, they and the cable companies especially, and just the increased use of streaming services that it's been coming our way, and the pandemic just kind of compressed the timeline. And you have, like you said, people are at home, they're on Zoom, they're doing video conferences more than ever before. The kids are doing hybrid classes or virtual classes. And then on top of that, you can't go to the movies.
No.
You can't go out and do stuff that you would otherwise do. So you turn on Netflix, you turn on, you know, Disney Plus, you turn on Apple Television. That is all just bandwidth.
Yes.
And the demand for construction and design of increased capacity isn't going to slow down anytime soon. It's just going to go up. So if you're a firm that's kind of looking into that sector, it seems to be a fairly sure bet.
So the challenge really has been that a lot of the folks that don't have that kind of connectivity are in rural places. So according to the FCC 2020 Broadband Deployment Report, just over 22% of rural Americans and more than 27% of folks that live on tribal lands don't have access to broadband internet. And so that's really, that sort of creates a divide that's economic, a divide that's really challenging. And even when you think of telehealth and telemedicine, you know, it even is a divide that can impact the health of our nation's population. So what's also been very interesting to witness is that both Democrats and Republicans, it's very bipartisan, the support for us to do something. And unfortunately, a lot of private companies, including, you know, your traditional telephone and cable companies who generally provide broadband to those of us in urban and suburban environments, aren't necessarily incentivized to bring that kind of broadband out to rural and to tribal populations because they just can't get enough market to make it worth the cost of the design and the construction. So there's been quite a few tools that the federal government has put forth that I detail in the brief and that I will detail in our presentation during the fall conference that sort of speak to that. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I try to do in these briefs, especially as a former business development director for AE firms, is to connect the money to the business opportunity. And there's a new client type, which is electric co-ops, that are really the ones who are going to be given the tools and the funding to step up and try to bring that kind of broadband out to rural populations.
Which is really interesting because, I mean, the history of the rural co-ops goes back to really the New Deal and FDR. Exactly. And, you know, the 30s and the 40s. But they've always been there. And no one's really thought about them. And it's kind of interesting that they're going to be the ones who are going to be leading the charge on bridging the digital divide. Right. In your experience with firm business development and talking to business development people at firms, I guess how much knowledge is there about, you know, the rural electric cooperatives among the industry? I mean, is this something that they're going to have to really read up on, or has there been, you know, some kind of...
I think it will be, you know, most utilities, whether they're electric co-ops or your more traditional Exelon type utilities like Pepco here in the district, have MSAs. So, And those are basically private sector versions of IDIQs for our firms that do a lot of public work. And, you know, they might be 3 to 5 years, and they enable, you know, firms that are our members to have sort of an open-ended contract where they can do task orders. So I think probably what we're going to see is a lot of electric co-ops that maybe only had one MSA or didn't have an MSA and just had, you know, a reliable civil firm that they contracted with, you know, opening themselves up and having more opportunities for firms to, you know, to contract with them. So the other thing that's interesting, which might help our firms gather intel, which we'll go into a little bit more at the fall conference and in the brief, is that, you know, all 50 states, which wasn't even true a few years ago, have set up broadband offices, mm-hmm. you know, within, you know, different agencies or administrations. And a lot of them either work very closely with economic development offices within that state or with departments of transportation or the utilities commission, you know, and those are all client types and agencies that our members are very familiar with. So, you know, connecting the dots, you know, between those agencies and also following the money from maybe an FCC or a USDA grant program to your state and seeing who gets it, I think is what will help trigger sort of that intel for member firms to know, you know, who to call on and who to start looking for RFPs from.
Yeah, it might just be one degree of separation away from the traditional relationship that firms right. already have. But again, you raise a really good point, because it's a good opportunity for firms that might be interested in entering this market sector to kind of take a look at their portfolio mm-hmm. and review what they've done and see where it might intersect with this to kind of maybe reconfigure their pitch and try to get on that list and get right. an MSA put in, so that, you know, like you said, if they might have had one or two institutional firms that they've done work in the past, and now if their demand is going to grow, then firms want to be in pole position to try to get those arrangements.
Right. And broadband offers, because it's so horizontal and it can take up so much land, there is quite an opportunity. It's very similar to working for other utilities or maybe doing pipeline sort of work. You know, there's opportunities beyond sort of your permitting and your site civil type skill set in, you know, in mapping. In fact, that is one of the executive orders that President Trump signed into effect, was that we really don't have even very strong mapping of where broadband is and isn't in this country. So earlier this year in March, he signed an executive order mandating that we get mapping. And that kind of surveying and GIS services is some of the great work that our firms do that might be really useful in the broadband push as well.
Yeah. And I think that from one part, what I'm sure you're going to cover this more at the conference, and if you want me to stop, because this is something.
Yeah, we don't want to give up. We don't want to go too much. Okay?
But it's been interesting. You mentioned in the brief companies like Microsoft, and I know that, you know, they have taken great lengths in getting industry partners and people from outside of the industry even to sign on to become carbon neutral. Yes. And ties into the kind of resiliency and sustainability argument. But for design firms, something else to keep in mind is that in the vertical construction of the actual data centers, is there's going to be a greater demand for very efficient,
right,
not clean, totally data yeah. centers.
It's really, really interesting, because no matter what resource you're talking about, whether it's power or whether it's water, if you're using that to chill, you know, data centers require a cooling that it just takes a lot of power. And so, you know, it's a very, very interesting to see how firms are, and they also actually generate a lot of power. So during our fall conference presentation, we're going to go into that a little bit more, but there's a lot of creativity that's there for our engineering community to express with data centers, both trying to get them to be net zero and carbon neutral by those 2030, which is only in 10 years or sort of dates. And also, you know, there's concepts around having data centers actually help power some of the other facilities in neighborhoods that they may be around. So it's a really interesting They're really interesting buildings. They don't always look really interesting. Mm-hmm. If any of us who have driven out in Ashburn here in Northern Virginia, we have a huge data center market. They're not the prettiest necessarily buildings, but they're very, very interesting what happens inside them.
Yeah, exactly. Massive, massive warehouses.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, the interesting stuff happens inside. Is there anything else about the brief you want to kind of tease for the fall conference or any other big takeaways? What you just mentioned is a good reason to attend your session.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway or the biggest teaser is sort of what hasn't come yet. So, you know, we are right now still waiting and watching to see what kind of stimulus the federal government puts forward, you know, and whether that's something that happens between now and the presidential election or beyond. But I am very confident that no matter what it is, it's going to include even more money than we've seen in the last year or two for broadband. And so, you know, I think this market has growth potential, not just within the next year, but for a few years going forward. So I would definitely encourage folks to come to the fall conference and when and if you do, to sign up to attend my concurrent session.
I think, Aaron, you said it all. I think that's a good place to leave it. Again, the brief can be accessed online at acec.org. The actual detail and the story behind the numbers can be seen and heard at the fall conference. So Aaron, thank you very much for coming back on. I know there'll be another brief to follow this one and we'll have you back on to talk about that. But yes. Definitely a fantastic resource for members of ACEC to have this kind of bespoke industry analysis at their fingertips available just online. And Aaron, keep up the great work and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time.